I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Okay, so the history-making handshake never happened at the United Nations last week between President Obama and Iran's President Hassan Rouhani. But they did chat on the phone, reportedly for about 15 minutes, as Rouhani was on his way to the airport to fly back to Iran. All last week at the UN, Rouhani's running commentary made for glowing headlines, a dramatic turnaround after more than three decades of high tension and heated rhetoric between the United States and Iran. Here's President Obama, sounding cautious but hopeful.
I don't believe this difficult history can be overcome overnight. The suspicions run too deep. But I do believe that if we can resolve the issue of Iran's nuclear program, that can serve as a major step down a long road towards a different relationship, one based on mutual interests and mutual respect.
Since the Iranian elections last month, Rouhani's launched a charm offensive aimed at the West with statements like, peace is within reach. Still, some folks aren't buying this new warm and fuzzy Iran, given the country's continued support for bad actors like Hezbollah and the Syrian government. Chief among the skeptics is Israel, where this weekend Israeli officials warned that the U.S. was being hoodwinked by Iran and that its nuclear ambitions and basic political character were unchanged. And in Iran itself, some more hardline politicians were also deeply suspicious about Rouhani's newfound Western popularity. Today in The Exchange, examining Iran, its intentions and interests, we talk with a panel of Granite Staters, and let's hear from you. How do you think the U.S. should approach this new, seemingly friendlier regime? Do you feel hopeful or skeptical about this so-called charm offensive? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange at nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. We have four guests for the hour with us in studio. Sarwar Kashmiri, adjunct professor at Norwich University, fellow at the Foreign Policy Association, author of NATO 2.0 and America and Europe After 9/11 and Iraq. And Sarwar, nice to see you. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Bill Martell, associate professor at the Fletcher School at Tufts University. Bill's most recent book is called Victory in War. And Bill, thanks for giving us your time.
My pleasure, Laura.
Also with us, Masood Sami, director of the International Institute for International Business and a professor at Southern New Hampshire University. Masood is a former chief economist for OPEC. He was born in Iran, educated in the U.S. And Masood Sami, welcome back to you, too. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Also with us, Reza Jalili, founding member of the Forum for Islamic and Middle Eastern Studies at New England College, where he's a professor of economics and accounting. Reza emigrated to the U.S. from Iran about 35 years ago to pursue his education. And Reza, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, and I wanted to start with you, Reza. Lots of talk about this charm offensive from President Rouhani since he was elected just back in August, but especially with his appearance at the U.N. this week, giving interviews and talking about peace and reconciliation. What do you think, Reza?
Well, Rouhani is obviously a new face. However, I don't think he is such a different person than public expects or media makes him to be. You have to remember he is well connected from deep within the Iranian regime, and he is far less moderate, if you will, than reformists of 2009 and Khatami before him. So I don't put too much hope in him.
Really? That's interesting. Give me a little more there. Because the West has been sort of wooed and charmed by this guy.
Yeah, but the thing is, you have to ask why. There must be some reason that Khamenei gave him the blessing and gave him the authority to do so. However, looking at his background, he has been the head of the national security, supreme national security of Iran. He has been advisors on many, many security issues, and he has been several time member of the parliament. He has been the chief nuclear negotiator. He is well connected, and when you look at his background, you know that he's not going to do anything that is drastically, separate from the Iranian regime's policies. He's just having a different tone. I don't think he's going to be much of a difference in act, indeed.
And you said Khamenei. That remind us who that is. You said that Rouhani wouldn't do anything without...
Yeah, Rouhani, Khamenei is the supreme leader of Iran. He's the basically the person who is indeed in charge of Iran. And to see what I'm talking about, he just about maybe 2 weeks ago, when a lot of people complained about Ahmadinejad and his 8 years and criticized him, Khamenei came out and specifically and directly said Ahmadinejad's policy was within Islamic Republic's policy, and anything in general deviation, any deviation from his general path is indeed bad and dangerous.
How about you, Massoud? How charmed are you by the charm offensive?
Well, I think more fundamental issue is that a person, or is that there's been a change in the policy of the government or attitude of the government? I'll maintain that is the second. That is, because of the sanctions, because of the number of other issues, it seems that there's a whole attitude toward the relationship with West has changed. To start with, the population, the majority, has elected Rouhani. So that, in a sense, shows that the majority of people are asking for more moderate, although I quite agree with Reza that is not completely independent, but at the end of the day, seems to be policy has changed. And the question is why that change has come about. Partly because of the attitude of Obama administration, not only putting sanction, but the change in the philosophy or the relationship with Iran from focusing on regime change to actually working with the regime. So that's a major issue, because up to recently, the attitude of United States and West was regime change. Now, all of a sudden, we see that there's no discussion of regime change, but rather coming to a compromise. So that has been actually, my feeling is that that has also changed the top-level attitude toward what to do with United States and West. And, of course, the election and support of the majority of people have actually given mandate to go about doing negotiations. So I'm a little bit more optimistic.
I want to ask you about the sanctions before I bring our other two guests in as well. And a lot of people are saying, you know, the real reason that Rouhani is doing this is because of the sanctions. They've been really tough on Iran. They got tougher just a couple years ago. You were there, Massoud. What did you see in terms of the economic impact of the sanctions?
Well, I was there for a short period, for only 2 weeks, 2 years ago, before the major part of sanctions start to work. At the time, the economy was doing well, but everybody was kind of worried that things are going to change really bad. So they're all anticipating deterioration. So there was anxiety, the people moving money out of the country, because still you could take money out without any control before the major devaluation of currency took place. But there was an environment, atmosphere of crisis atmosphere that, or impending crisis, coming crisis. So there was a really difficult situation. But since then, what we hear from Iran is that economically there has been a considerable deterioration because of the exchange rate, because of inflation, it's a very high inflation, economic recession, unemployment. So the economy has actually deteriorated dramatically over the last 2 years.
That's interesting. And Bill Martell, I'd love your thoughts there too, especially in terms of diplomacy and so forth. You know, I think some folks might hear sanctions and think, well, that's kind of a soft tool, you know. But it sounds like from what Massoud is saying, it's had a big impact.
It has, Laura. The analyses of the two-part guests were outstanding, I thought. The function of sanctions is to put pressure on a regime to persuade them to change course. And we've had a number of UN Security Council resolutions condemning Iran and putting sanctions on Iran. And as both guests have pointed out, there's pressure on the economy. Every report you read is the Iranian economy is hurting. On the one hand, on the other hand, there's no evidence at all that the sanctions have had a decade or more of UN Security Council resolutions and the diplomacy that we've been engaged in. There's no evidence it slowed down either the nuclear program or the ballistic missile program. And that's the heart of the issue for us in diplomacy. And I think so. I think many people were optimistic watching that set of events last Friday between the president and Rouhani. But there is that fundamental question that we haven't yet resolved. And I think in American politics, and we've had a position for a long time where it is I don't quite know right now. It is that it's been unacceptable for Iran to have nuclear weapons. So I think this is the fundamental dilemma. I don't think that a charm offensive on the part of the Iranian leadership will change that dynamic. It's a fundamental question that President Obama and the leadership in the U.S. has to make. Are we willing to allow Iran to have nuclear weapons or not? And I think that issue has extraordinary consequences both regionally and globally for a whole bunch of dimensions. 3 weeks ago, we were talking here about Syria, and one of the issues we brought up was the question of Iran and credibility. So this is the problem that we have to wrestle with here in the States.
Sarwar, go ahead, jump in.
So I agree basically with my friend Masood here and also I think the nuclear issue. But allow me just to tell you, and I can continue after the break, I believe that we are on the cusp of a geopolitical change of the same magnitude as the end of the Cold War and the normalization of relations with China.
Wow, so you're feeling pretty optimistic.
I am optimistic, and I want to tell you why, and I'd like to put it in some historical perspective just to give your listeners some background in this. And I go back to the 7th century when the founding of Islam, the Prophet Muhammad, after he died, there was a huge schism in the religion about whether only descendants of the Prophet can rule Muslims. It was almost outright warfare, and there was a grandson of the Prophet, Imam Hassan, Imam meaning holy man, who negotiated a peace treaty with the people who believed that was not necessary. It was a huge achievement, and it was said that he did this peace treaty, he made this compromise for the good of the religion, and therefore he was praised for that.
And Sarah, we'll pick up on that after a short break and hear what our other guests think about the cusp of a huge geopolitical change. We'll also hear from you. Stay with us.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And when you become an NHPR sustaining member, you help NHPR collect an additional $10,000. When 500 listeners become sustainers, we'll receive $10,000 from the Mackinich Foundation and cancel a day from our upcoming fall fund drive. You listen to NHPR. Now it's time to support and sustain us at NHPR.org. Ramshire weather becoming mostly sunny today. High temperatures in the lower 70s. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from New Hampshire Orthopedic Center, keeping bodies in motion on the web at nhoc.com. And from North Branch Construction, celebrating 55 years in business, from custom-built homes to eco-friendly commercial buildings on time, on budget. Find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and northbranch.net. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, restarting relations with Iran. We're getting some Granite State responses to the new Iranian president's so-called charm offensive at the United Nations last week. Join us with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. How do you think the U.S. should approach this new, seemingly friendlier regime? Do you feel hopeful about the new tone coming out of Iran or deeply skeptical? Give us a call. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And all of you, before we go to our listeners, I did want to give you, Sarwar Kashmiri, a chance to just finish up your point. You were going way back in history to the great prophet Muhammad and the split in Islam.
Indeed, and I'll bring it right back to 2013. So I mentioned that the grandson of the prophet worked out this treaty in a situation that was considered almost blasphemous. And there was a book written on his action in working out this treaty called Heroic Flexibility. Now, who has translated this tract but Ali Khamenei, the supreme leader who controls everything in Iran? And he has started to use the word glorious flexibility. And a lot of analysts in Iran have picked up on this and said that this is really meaningful, because here is the supreme leader who says that glorious flexibility means that a consensus with the United States may not mean we are defeated, but that it's in the best interest of the religion, which is why that I'm more hopeful than some of my guests here, and I believe we're on the cusp of a major geopolitical change.
Wow, that's really interesting. Glorious flexibility. And you started off the hour, Reza Jalili, saying you were pretty skeptical of this new regime and their sort of warm and fuzzy image. What do you think?
Well, I wish I was as hopeful. My question always is this: why? Why Khamenei now all of a sudden talks about glorious flexibility? And what has changed? Nothing fundamental. Rouhani has a different personality than Ahmadinejad, to be sure.
That's the previous president who said, you know, Israel shouldn't be on the map and so
previous
forth.
Previous president, hardliner president. But prior to him, we had other presidents in Iran that were much more reformist-minded and softer than Rouhani. It's just the time and the place. You have to take one quick look at the list of ministers that were approved by a majority-ruled hardliner majlis or parliament in Iran. All of his political, security, economic ministers were approved. There were three reformists in his list. All three were rejected. And the conservatives, who were a majority, backed almost unanimously. But the three reformist ministers were kicked out. And I cannot put too little emphasis on the fact that Khamenei specifically said any deviation from our past is bad and even dangerous.
Wow. So how are we supposed to figure this out? And Masood, I'll turn to you. I mean, you hear the one statements at the United Nations, but then you hear, you know, what Reza's saying about the old hardliners are still pulling the strings. What do you think?
Well, I think the question Reza asked was very relevant. What has happened that there has been this change? First of all, there was an election that the new president has come about with a majority of vote for a change.
And sorry to interrupt, but was that election seen as what we would call free and fair?
I would assume, because otherwise there would be, if we go with the line that the conservatives and reactionaries would be in power, then he would not get elected. So therefore, for whatever reason, he has been elected with majority. That's one. The second thing, I think partly is because of the U.S. policies, both, as I mentioned, because of the sanction and changing the policy. So the regime at the top feels more secure to be in power. Now comes out the question that what is we expecting out of that? This part of it is the behavior of the regime. And that in itself becomes a question. One part, of course, is the issue of the nuclear negotiation. But that by itself is not the only issue. I think also the whole regional politics would get involved, would get part of this whole negotiation. Because earlier on, the policy of Iranian government was export of revolution. The question now is that have they changed that policy so that the neighbors would feel more secure? I think that's an issue. I can go back to the previous U.S. president who really gave Iran a favor, so there was no reason for them to change. The enemies of Iran were Taliban and Saddam Hussein. We changed those. So they feel very secure internationally at that time. Oil prices went up to $140. So financially they become secure, and U.S. remained as the as their enemy, focusing on regime change at the time. And so they feel that anything was going wrong in Iran, blame it on the United States. All those elements has changed now. So they have to change the policy internationally. Negotiation would be on, my feeling is that would be on nuclear issue as well as geopolitics and change the role of Iran. And I think that would come back to the what Saru said, that would be a major change in the whole region.
I want to ask you, Bill, too, about Sarwar's point, and then talk more specifically, guys, about the nuclear issue and also support for Hezbollah, relations with Syria, because you're right, Masoud, it's more than just the nuclear issue, although that's mm-hmm. giant. What do you think, Bill, about Sarwar's comment? I think it's really interesting. Mm-hmm. He feels like we're on the cusp of a geopolitical change, possibly as big as, you know, the end of communism in Eastern Europe. Reza, feeling a little more nervous about that. I wonder where you fall.
My first thought when I heard Sarwar say that was, I want to believe. There is potentially that, but I'm framed in such a way where I'm not sure that your listeners will draw comfort from it. If I don't think there's any evidence that the government of Iran has made a decision to move away from nuclear weapons. Every bit of evidence we have is that they're moving dramatically in that direction. And my own estimate
toward
nuclear weapons, toward possessing an active nuclear arsenal with ballistic missiles. They have active ballistic missile program, very active nuclear program, and they have the number I saw was a couple hundred, 100 or so kilograms of 20% enriched uranium. For those that aren't into nuclear weapons kinds of issues, that means it's a very quick step from there to bomb-grade weapons material. If there is to use Sarwar's terms, we're on the cusp of a geopolitical shift, it might occur if the United States has drawn the conclusion that it's willing to live with a nuclear Iran. And I don't know if that's the case or not. But I have to wonder slightly, because there was a pretty dramatic shift in events in the last week or two. As we talked about 3 weeks ago, right now on the show, talking about Syria and red lines and issues, I think the credibility of the United States has been somewhat damaged. I don't know, frankly, how firm the commitment of the United States is, particularly the Obama administration, is toward taking steps to prevent Iran from having nuclear weapons.
That's a big statement, Bill.
Because
publicly they've said no.
And I am so firmly committed to bipartisanship and foreign policy, but they said no on moving and using chemical weapons in Syria, and that fell by the wayside. And we said that several weeks ago. So I'm increasingly wondering how strong the commitment of the United States is to Iran not having nuclear weapons. Now, this morning, the president has meetings with Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel. And as we'll talk about more in the show, the consequences for Iran moving from a pre-nuclear to a nuclear state will realign the Middle East geopolitically in ways that I think would not be consistent with Sarwar's views. So I think this is the issue now that we have to wrestle with, and I don't have the clarity of thought right now, listening and watching what the United States has been doing, on just how firm that commitment is to preventing Iran from having nuclear weapons, and if that commitment is eroding, and I'm being speculative here, that would explain in part the decision to engage in that kind of breakthrough discussions with the Iranians.
So Sarwar, Bill says, hey, every indication is that they're still moving toward nuclear weapons. He's not convinced. Why are you so optimistic that Iran might give up its nuclear weapons?
Well, I'm relying
Or its on, progress toward nuclear weapons.
I'm relying on public evidence and testimony from the entire U.S. intelligence establishment that contradicts what my friend Bill has said, that not only is Iran not close to nuclear weapons, but it still hasn't been able to put those things together. I believe there will be a compromise where Iran will agree to hold off making a nuclear weapon in return for the West agreeing to its development of nuclear capability for its hospitals and for its medical situation as a right. So that, as far as credibility is concerned, I think the credibility is huge that Mr. Obama has. I was on one of our nuclear aircraft carriers not long ago, and when you see the 75 aircraft, which have more power than most air forces in the world, one of them is standing by Syria right now, that's where American credibility is. And I think it's part of their credibility that led to Russia joining with Syria. So, credibility and compromise, and I think that's where it'll be.
I also want to invite our listeners to join us as we move especially toward this conversation of what the U.S. should do, what this country should do in terms of Iran, how it should move forward. Let's get your thoughts on what you think American policy should be at this point with Iran. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you as we hear talk about a possible thaw with Iran. What are your thoughts about how the U.S. should approach this? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. So here's the point where I say, what do you guys want to see happen? And Reza, I'll turn to you first. In your perfect world, how would the U.S. approach this? What would the president and Secretary Kerry do and say?
Well, I really don't know. But I want to go back to...
Putting you in charge here for just a couple minutes.
I want to go back to what Bill said. You know, what he said is really, if you go with that premise, explains a lot of uncertainties here. If United States has already agreed on Iran having a nuclear bomb and consider that a fait accompli, then it makes sense. Then that means Iran has that assurance or at least that green light, and that's why they're moving to this direction. They may put it on ice for a while, but they are in a path for having a nuclear bomb, and they will have it.
So you're deeply suspicious like Bill is.
I'm not really suspicious. I know they want it, and they will get it. I mean, I go that far. And there is nothing really, maybe this is the realization, there is nothing really can be done about that. Iran has passed that threshold. So given that, then they realize the games are changed. So they realize it. U.S. realizes this, and then this could be a path for new development changes that you're talking about. Without that element, without that assumption, it is very difficult to say why Iran is doing this. And I totally agree. And one thing else I wanted to say, and that was the Rouhani being elected by majority. Rouhani was elected by only slightly over 50% that they avoided the runoff. And also the one reformist presidential candidate dropped out in his favor at the last moment. And there are only five, and all five were heavily vetted by the council in Iran. So it's not really that it is the will of majority. It's just the lesser of the evil that they go and vote for this guy against the other guy.
So wait, you're saying something profound then, and I want to hear from the rest of you on this too. But Reza, you're saying Iran's basically already there with a nuclear weapon, and that's why we're seeing this charm offensive, because the whole pieces on the chessboard have changed and everybody sort of knows it, even though nobody wants to say it? Is that what you're saying?
That's my assessment, yes.
I would just add quickly that the assessments that I was referring to were briefings that were given last fall by the International Atomic Energy Agency, which is a UN agency. And so it wasn't really U.S. intel, but it was the Atomic Energy Agency, the UN agency, that said clear evidence of developing fissile material, clear evidence, and I'm quoting the report directly, of nuclear warhead bomb design, which is explosive mechanisms to make these weapons go off. I don't think I'd say – I agree very much with Reza's point. I don't think I'd say that they're there. My view is, and I think this is a pretty broad consensus view within the foreign policy national security community, is they're very close. And the steps are finalizing enrichment of highly enriched uranium to produce 90% bomb-grade material and then assembling that into weapon. My own view is within the year-ish, we could see a nuclear test.
Okay, and I want to get – so I can see Star Wars jumping, and I definitely get Masoud in. But just to clarify, Bill, so you do not believe all the talk that we heard from Iran's new president last week that this is purely peaceful. You don't believe that?
I don't believe it, and I think the evidence is that nobody else believes it. Frankly, the Israelis are concerned about it. Our European allies are concerned about it. What has prevented activity on our part has really been two things. One, we haven't been willing to take the steps required to remove the nuclear program from Iran, which is military, using air power and military strikes. And second, the Iranians have had very powerful support from Russia and China within the UN Security Council, basically keeping us away.
Okay, and Sarah, hold on a second, because Masood, I want to hear from you too. So Bill and Reza, highly skeptical. They're moving toward a bomb and don't believe that it's all for peace.
I'm not convinced of that. I think they may have moved toward that, but I think they're far from actually getting to that point.
And so, they're willing to pull back, given the statements we've heard?
Yes, they may. That's what the negotiation is all about. Negotiation is not to go ahead by yourself and decide, but that unilaterally, but you have to negotiate that. So the question, I think, throughout, they have maintained that we want to use that for peaceful purposes. They never, ever suggested that's going to be for military purposes. Now, we don't believe them, we don't trust them, and that's the question of the trust that has been going on for years. So at some point, this negotiation, if it gets to a point that, I guess within a couple of weeks, there's going to be negotiation in Geneva, they come to the point that they can have a way to make sure, assure the international community that this is not going to be for the military purpose, building atomic bomb, rather than that we're going to pull back to a certain degree to a lower level, then the problem's going to be solved. But the question is that what do they get in return for it? It's not that unilaterally you're going to say, I'm going to stop doing something that is going to give me a lot of great leverage.
That's the sanctions that you talked about earlier.
Sanctions. So something has to give, and this is that's the opportunity to come through with this solution at this point.
Let's see if we can get a call in before the break, gentlemen. And Ahmed is calling from Peterborough. Hi, Ahmed, you're on the air. Go ahead.
My question was whether a nuclear-free Middle East should be on the table as a negotiation position. Maybe, you know, from Iran it should come.
All right, Ahmed, thank you very much for the call. And Sarwar, I'm sure that's something you'd love to see. I'm sure that's something everybody would love to see. Thank you very much.
Yes, Ahmed, I totally agree with you, and I think that's why that question was raised by the president of Iran, that you have Israel next to Iran with 200 to 300 nuclear weapons. I believe the Middle East is very unstable with one power with all the nuclear weapons and no one else having it. I myself personally believe that Iran having a nuclear weapon would add to stability in the Middle East, but that's not what you're asking. I do believe entirely that we should have a nuclear-free Middle East.
That would mean Israel giving up its nuclear weapons, though, Sarwar. And as you know, Israel feels very threatened by its neighbors. So I'm thinking that they probably wouldn't want to do that.
Well, they probably wouldn't want to do that right now, which is why I think that the plan that Mr. Obama has of getting Syria and Iran underway and then Israel will feel safer. And so Ahmed is on the right track. I agree.
Okay. Ahmed, thank you very much for calling. And we'll take more of your calls and comments after a super short break. So keep it right here.
This is NHPR. It's 9:39. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the rollout of Obamacare. Then best-selling author Bill Bryson on the summer of 1927 in America. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show, this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Dr. Rod Burdett and Riverview Dental of Concord, offering same-day tooth replacement with mini dental implants for stable chewing and enhanced denture retention. Details at 228-1066. And White Mountain Oil and Propane in North Conway, featuring the Renai Heater and Intelligent Heating Solutions for homes, additions, condos, and vacation homes. WhiteMountainOil.com. Currently mostly sunny across New Hampshire today, high temperatures in the lower 70s. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we're going to study up on the new Common Core educational standards coming to New Hampshire schools. you can send us an email before the program if you'd like with your questions at exchange@nhpr.org or comment on Facebook at NHPR Exchange before the show. And then be sure to join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in the Exchange, a roundtable of Granite Staters on Iran's new so-called charm offensive. We're talking about what may be behind it, how the U.S. should react. Join us with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also comment on our Facebook page. Again, it's NHPR Exchange. One more time, the number, 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, just before the break, we had a great call from Ahmed in Peterborough, who said he thought it would be a good idea to have a nuclear-free Middle East. Sarah Kashmir, you talked about that a little bit. But Reza, I'd also like your thoughts, too, and the idea that, you know, Israel probably isn't going to want to give up its nuclear weapons given the threats it feels from its neighbors.
Probably not. And I don't think they should. But I was going to go back to the atomic bomb and Iranian position. I think Iranian the atomic bomb, just like it is an existential question for Israel, it is existential question for Iran. Regardless of what government is in Iran, and we have seen this in past 40 years or so, they want this, and it is viewed by them that this is a matter of survival. They must have it. You know, Iran has interests, historical ties, and legitimate interests from China, Tajikistan to Mediterranean, from Caspian Sea to the southern shores of Persian Gulf. So Iran sees itself that way and wants to assert itself that way. So they're going to have it. They're going to go for it. And I think this will add to the security of the area. There is one other thing you can do. In fact, allowing Iran to have this, the U.S. can get the concession of coexistence with Israel. You know, they accept the existence of Israel and basically remove the threat of things. Because at the end of the day, in my opinion, Iran and Israel are natural allies.
Let me see if I got you right there, Reza. You said Iran having a nuclear bomb will add to the security of the region?
It's going to be detente all over. It's going to be detente all over. They're not going to use it against anybody, and they're going to basically feel secure in their own internal dynamics.
Wow. That's not what you hear, though.
No.
That's not the general consensus.
No, it's not.
Go ahead, Bill Martell.
Yeah, the issue of a nuclear-free zone is something that everybody's been thinking about this for decades, and it always collapses on the following. People think it's a good idea in principle. It collapses on the argument, what if somebody ends up in a nuclear-free zone with one nuke? And then the consequences of cheating, the benefits for cheating for a state would be tremendous because you would really have superiority. I think the issue – one of the views that I've had for a long time is that all states should be permitted to have nuclear weapons if they behave in a responsible fashion. And I think the complaint against Iran for the last several decades has been its behavior has been, as the expression goes, not terribly productive.
Well, helping out Hezbollah,
And actually, despite the economic sanctions, I just read this morning that support on the part of Iran to Syria, Hezbollah, and Hamas has increased. So they're actually providing more economic assistance to these organizations. But the issue with Iran is this question of how responsible they would be possessing nuclear weapons. The other side of it, and this is what makes me nervous about this whole discussion, is that states such as Turkey, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE have all said in various public fora that if Iran gets nuclear weapons, we too will have nuclear weapons. Now we have a nuclear arms race in the Middle East, which involves not only nuclear weapons, fissile material, bomb-grade material, warhead design. That is dangerous, dangerous, dangerous stuff to be out in a world where we have extremist groups such as al-Qaeda and others that have been looking to get nuclear weapons for decades.
Yikes.
And so I put all that together, and I think that the better long-term position is not to engage in a nuclear arms race. Now, when India and Pakistan developed nuclear weapons, the world didn't go crazy. Same with other states, because their behavior had been responsible. If you take out of Iranian behavior support for radical groups, extremist groups, lots of terrible stuff, you'd have a very different discussion going on here, and but I don't know that we're quite at that point yet.
Masood, real quick, and then I want to go back to our listeners.
Yes, quickly, even if they're responsible, the government can change, as we saw in Iran and we saw in Pakistan. So that's one issue. And the second one is that exactly because of the danger that Bill is talking about, this is a window of opportunity that we should negotiate to make sure that Iran doesn't get nuclear weapon. At the low-grade uranium enrichment that they can use for commercial purposes, that's fine. So if we agree on that and eliminate sanctions, that seems to be the negotiation, I think that's a great situation. And that's the window that we have. Now, if we don't take that window, the radical group in Iran and also those radical group in U.S. that would want, for whatever reason it is, that they want, they may push the government to actually create more conflict, and then we will have difficulty of going back to this situation. This is one small window that we have at this point in history over the last 30 years that we have to seize the opportunity.
Let's take another call if we could, gentlemen. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Bernard is calling from Newmarket. Hi, Bernard. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks very much, Laura, for taking my call.
Sure.
Each of your guests has referred to Iran's historical position, and my question deals with the northern border. Historically, Iran and the Russia, and of course in the days of the Soviet Union, that was not usually a friendly relationship. Now on the northern border is Turkmenistan. So I'd like to have your guests tell us a bit about what is the relationship from Iran's perspective with regard to its northern border and what had been the former Soviet Union. One last point. President Putin in Moscow is attempting to expand Russia's interest too much of the former Soviet Union. In that context, please put into context the Iranian position.
Okay. Wow. That's a lot. And thank you so much, because, you know, we tend to think of Iran, U.S., Israel, maybe Syria. But Sarwar, maybe to you, he's right. I mean, there are a whole other sort of borders and other issues that Iran needs to think about.
Absolutely. And in fact, if you look at the borders of Iran, almost all of them, if not all of them, have U.S. vital national interests connected to them. Right, and Turkmenistan and the other republics also fall in that category, because they were turned loose by, if you will, the Soviet Union. But there are connections, Islamic connections, and other connections. The other question that you had relates, I think, to this whole question of how responsible has Iran been.
And responsible is subjective. I mean, that's our definition.
Exactly. So. And what I wanted to say, Bernard, is that there is, if you go back five centuries, there is not one instance of Iran being an aggressor against any of its neighbors. So when you look at Turkmenistan, when you look at Pakistan, when you look at any of the other countries, we need to remember that. And I also just wanted to add, Laura, that Iran's behavior can be explained by a balance of power relationship. They're surrounded by Sunni countries on one side, by Israel and the West on the other. And so they have used Hezbollah and they have used Hamas to balance that force. That's how powers behave. And so I don't equate that with responsibility or irresponsibility. That is simply a fact of geopolitical life.
You're not condoning it, but you're explaining
it. I'm explaining it. And so which is why I believe there will be a compromise here, because we now know that there is no solution to Syria, there's no solution to Iraq, there's no solution to the tiff with Israel without Iran being intimately involved. And therefore, I believe we are headed to a compromise. And Bernard, I hope that answers some of what you asked.
Yeah, it's a great question, Bernard. Thank you very much. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. And here's an email that came in from Michael in Hollis, who says, in addition to the sanctions, Iran may be being influenced by other factors as well. Michael says Iran is seriously overextended internationally, Syria, Lebanon, Hamas, and Gaza, which is a tax on its economy. And he says a huge number of young people without prospects for their future. Michael, thank you very much. Reza, what do you think?
Well, overextend, probably. But as I said, and as Sarwar was alluding to, Iran has legitimate interests there. We might call Hamas or Hezbollah as terrorist organization, and no question, I'm not fond of those. But if you want to explain the situation, when Iran is cornered, it has to invoke its allies, and they are its allies. So we'll use whatever it's necessary. Remember, Iran in the eve of U.S. invading Afghanistan, Iran was the, in fact, Zarif himself, the current foreign minister, was the one who facilitated the American invasion of Afghanistan. And of course, a few days later, the Bush administration counted Iran as axis of evil, I believe that was the term he used. So, yes, Iran may have overextended itself, and that may be the reason that they want to sit down. But there are some principles that are not going to back down on those. They may postpone it for a little while, but they are not going to back down on a nuclear issue and or support
down.
For their allies.
Or a nuclear weapon? They're not going to back down on that either?
They're not going to back down on that. I can almost sense it. I can almost
really?
Feel
now,
it.
Again, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but all the statements I read last week were peaceful, 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 peaceful.
Well, we have heard about a lot of these things in the past as well. So the fad is not always the correct one.
Yeah, interesting. Bill, did you want to jump in there?
I just say, if Iran wanted to clear the decks on this nuclear issue, all they have to do is go to the UN and say... And he was at the – President Rouhani was at the UN. We will open up all inspections, all facilities in Iran to full IAEA, International Atomic Energy Agency inspections. That's all he had to do. Say, we really don't want nuclear weapons. We'll open up everything to inspections. You may look at everything we possess. Riz is dying to say something,
that's,
I can tell.
That's exactly right. Actually, they just opened the heavy water nuclear – I think they started construction in Iraq. So and that tells you something. They're it's not going to back down on this.
It's full speed ahead. That's what – but anyway.
Precisely.
Go ahead, Masoud.
Well, I think probably that would come as a part of negotiation. It's not that unilaterally you're going to say, I'm going to stop doing what you want me to do, do what you want me to do and stop moving toward the nuclear enrichment without getting any concession.
Right,
so
they need
that is going to come out
that.
In negotiation. So I'm kind of certain that part of negotiation is going to, if I do that, what am I going to get in return and which sanction is going to reduce? On the on that email that came to you, I read somewhere that Iran's spending $600 to $700 million a month for Syria and Lebanon, and given the financial situation, that's not sustainable. So I'm sure that that is going to again be part of the financial pressure that they have. They have to cut down some of those expenses, because financially they cannot do that.
Well, and that's a question that, boy, we could do a whole other hour on the Syria situation and Iran's role in it. And I was struck, Masoud, by what Reza said. He reminds us that right after 9/11, when the U.S. was talking about going into Afghanistan, you know, retaliating against the Taliban and so forth, Reza's right. Iran did help us do that. Is there an opportunity for Iran and the U.S. to get together on some sort of a solution to this terrible civil war in Syria?
Probably. I think, again, there's a French suggestion that in the next discussion on Syria, they would include Iran under certain condition. Whether that's going to happen and so forth, I think that's going to be one of the issues on the table. So who knows? Who knows? As part of joining the international agreements or international family for Iran, is part of it is to be constructive in those dialogues, not being negative and being hard-headed. So I think that is probably would be behavioral change that's going to come to them. And I have to see what's the benefit for them. I mean, it's a cost-benefit analysis. For them, the benefit is that they have to get something in return for being constructive.
Sarwar, go ahead. Iran possibly helping out with Syria.
Well, I think there's no question about that, because there is no solution to what's happening in Syria without Iran being involved, so they have to. But I want to pick up something that Masoud said that I totally agree with. Ray, what is it what is in it for Iran. I can think of no more unequivocal statement than what President Hassan Rouhani said at the UN, is that we are not interested in making a nuclear weapon. There is also a fatwa by a previous head of Iran, which is the holy promise from Shia Islam to not have a nuclear weapon. But I do agree with all of the guests that Iran will want to go to a stage where they can then, in an emergency, create an atomic weapon. But I don't believe they want an atomic weapon now.
So you agree that they're super-duper close?
I think they will want to get super-duper close. I'm not convinced they're super-duper close now because as a sovereign country, they're fully entitled to be super-duper close. That's where I think they are, and I think that's where the battle, if you will, is joined. And I think that's why there will be a compromise because they're involved with all of these other countries that are vital American interests.
Bill, you look like you've got something on your mind.
I was going to your question just a little while ago. You said, what should we do? And I was thinking about that, and I listened to all the comments of people around the table, and it seems to me that the United States needs to make Iran has made a fundamental decision. They're going to have a nuclear weapon no matter what. And
Sarwar doesn't agree with that.
Yeah,
that,
okay, but we'll just politely disagree. But I think more of it, whatever. So I think the fundamental decision for the United States is, are we willing to live with a nuclear Iran? If the answer is yes, I think, as Reza and Masood and Sarwar pointed out, it explains a lot that we're seeing going on now. If not, then the United States needs to make that decision whether it's willing to use military force to prevent Iran from having nuclear weapons. I think the rejoinder to the charm offensive should have been a U.S. Declaration that they should open up all Iranian inspection facilities, and we should engage in discussions in the United States about whether it's time to take military action. I've always believed that that threat might get us to a position where we don't have a nuclear Iran at the end of the day, and I think that nuclear Iran at the end of the day will have really tough consequences for us, our friends, allies, and the region, and frankly, globally. But, you know, as the expression goes, time will tell.
Well, and the talks start in Geneva in about 2 weeks.
Yes.
And Bill, you got the last word today.
Oh, well.
Thank you all very much for being here. Bill Martell, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Laura. Thank you.
Bill Martell, Associate Professor at the Fletcher School at Tufts University. Masood Sami, it was great to see you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Masood Sami, Director of the Institute for International Business and a professor at Southern New Hampshire University. Sarwar Kashmiri, thanks for making the trip. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Sarwar Kashmiri, adjunct professor at Norwich University, fellow at the Foreign Policy Association. And Reza Jalili, good to see you. Thank you also for your time.
My pleasure.
Reza Jalili, founding member of the Forum for Islamic and Middle Eastern Studies at New England College, where he's a professor of economics and accounting. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, studying up on Common Core. With a new school year underway, educators are counting down to this new set of rigorous standards going fully into effect in 2015. Supporters say major change is needed to prepare students for a global economy. Still, concerns are being raised in some communities, especially Manchester. We'll find out more about Common Core. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
Diane Rehm Show, next at 10 on NHPR, where support comes from UR members, Sam from Raf Young and Pignatelli, with law offices in Concord, Nashua, and Boston, National Impact, uniquely New Hampshire, on the web at raflaw.com. And from AARP, presenting You've Earned a Say, a community discussion on solutions to keep Medicare and Social Security strong, inviting Granite Staters to join the conversation at aarp.org/NH.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO, Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 89.1.
91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
It's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. The federal government is on the verge of a partial shutdown, the first in nearly two decades. And the Affordable Care Act is at the center of the political fight. Early yesterday, the House approved a measure to delay President Obama's signature health law.